You'll hear who's performing inside them on WUSB's concert billboard, both on air and online at WUSB.FM/CCC.
And this is radio station WUSB Stony Brook, 1 minute after 6 o'clock, time once again for Off the Wall.
Your WUSB concert billboard for Sunday.
Thank you.
Testing. 1, 2, 3, 4. Oh, good. Sorry, we have to whack the equipment here sometimes just to get it to work. It's unprofessional, but it's the only thing that seems to make it actually work. All the other instructions don't have that effect. I'm so relaxed coming in here, and as soon as I get here, it's all tense because of all the things falling apart and just trying to get me to lose my cool. But, you know, it's not going to happen. Not today. I don't know why not today, but just I don't feel like it. So that's how it's going to be. So as long as things continue to work and we don't hear a spurious sound and lack of sound when we need it, then we'll all get through this in one piece. Now then, yes, this is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you this Tuesday evening. We'll be taking phone calls tonight. Next week, we begin the spring fundraiser, so we won't be able to take phone calls for, well, at least the next few weeks. I think it goes until mid-April. And hopefully we'll get lots of support, because we need lots of support in this day and age of economic strife and all kinds of other challenges. Without our listeners, we're basically just a lot of dead air. Or a religious station. Whatever would take our place if we weren't here. We have all kinds of things to talk about or look at today. Some good, some bad. Some thematic in style. Basically, how our society, how our country is bound to be looked back upon as something quite insane, something quite out of the ordinary, something that a lot of lessons will be learned from in the textbooks of future centuries. But we'll get into that soon enough. I think it's spring break here, right? It must be, because there's nobody in the building. I should pay more attention. I should know when spring break is here at Stony Brook. But, you know, the reason why I'm confused, it's not spring, for one thing. So, it can't really be spring. I guess maybe they call it midwinter break. Is that it? Because we have the winter break. So then, okay, midwinter. So maybe there is no spring break. I don't know. I don't even know when Easter is. I've just been kind of involved in a lot of projects and kind of burying myself in that and just occasionally watching the world go by. Bit of history made. Oh, but a new Pope got installed today. Yeah, that's something. That's history. Microsoft could learn a thing or two by the smooth installation of a Pope. You know, it's this guy basically came from the other side of the world, and there were no issues. No authorization codes. No copy protection, none of that. Clean install. And that's what I think any of us deserve. But yeah, what do you think? Pope Francis didn't see that coming. From Argentina. And this guy, he's not going to be wearing the red shoes. He's not going to be wearing the traditional showy garments and the necklaces and jewelry. And won't be riding down Vegas in the tinted window kind of car that most popes have done in the past. He basically is a pope for the poor, which, with 1.2 billion Catholics in the world, that's a lot more than I thought, actually. It's a good thing to be standing up for those people who never get a voice. And let's see if he means it. Let's see if actually some change can come about and some attention paid towards the people that always get the short end of the stick. So whether or not you're religious, whether or not you're of that particular religion, it is history, it is something to watch in this changing world of ours. Because first time that there's a pope from Argentina, first time a Jesuit pope, first time I believe a pope didn't wear the red shoes. I'm not sure about that. But watching all the commentary, television coverage, reading about in the newspapers, people talking about this once-in-a-lifetime experience. And, you know, maybe for him it's a once-in-a-lifetime experience, but not for the rest of us. If you recall, we just did this a few years ago when we got Pope Benedict. And then before that, many of you remember Pope John Paul II, and those of you who were there for that certainly were here for John Paul I, because I think he only was in power for about a month before he died. And those of you who are older might even remember the Pope before that. I think it was Pope Paul. And at that stage, I'm not paying attention anymore. I'm sure there are people who can recite every single one of them. Yes, I feel obligated to say the whole thing is silly. The whole thing is a big waste of time. But it keeps people off the streets and gives us something to talk about. And isn't that what it's all about in the end? Yeah. First Pope Francis ever, though. Imagine that. They all take their names from various saints or previous popes or whatnot. And this is the first time that St. Francis of Assisi has been recognized in such a way. They said it was almost unheard of that somebody would use that name because there could never be a second Francis. And now here there is a second Francis. So in a way, it's kind of saying that the guy's got a bit of an ego there. But then he comes out and says that he's going to be representing the poor and to pray for him and all that kind of nonsense. Well, it's not really nonsense, is it? It's something that captures our attention. And it's a hell of a lot better than talking about Justin Bieber, isn't it? Which apparently is what the media feels is the most important thing to talk about. I'm not going to talk about that. Or whatever is going on. I don't even know what's going on. I don't know what color his hair is today. I don't know what facial expression or what he said or whatever. You know, I'm kind of like torn between overall disgust for the whole thing and leave the poor kid alone. Not that he's a poor kid, but come on already. We seem to delight in just tearing people apart. We make them famous, then we tear them apart. It's really some kind of crazy psychological thing going on there. And yeah, the whole raising people to the level of gods is also a sickness that needs to be addressed and quelled, hopefully. Because there are a lot of people out there with talent, a lot of people who can do all sorts of things, and we should try and focus on more of them, not elevate a few to such ridiculous levels that no human can possibly sustain. All right, I guess that leads into more craziness. Our friends in North Korea. You know, I don't think they're crazy. I think they're working closely with the United States government to create the kind of world where there is a boogeyman, and where we have to spend all kinds of money to protect ourselves against that evil. Because in the last week, I've heard talk of, despite all the dismissing of North Korea's rhetoric, well, now we must protect ourselves against a nuclear weapon that they'll lob over our way, even though everybody knows they don't have the capability to do that, and even if they did, it would never make it here in the first place. But that's not stopping those in control from saying, yeah, we have to protect ourselves. We need more money, and you need less money. We need more, so we're going to defend ourselves against... I don't know how defending ourselves against their particular fictional bomb is different from protecting ourselves against the last enemy's fictional bomb, but apparently it involves spending a lot more, and as we all watch the news and listen to the nonsense, we all agree and say, okay. Anyway, moving into something a bit more humorous than that. North Korea's first public senior-level mention of South Korea's first female president ended up being a sexist crack. Yeah, the body that controls North Korea's military complained last Wednesday about the venomous swish of her skirt. It just sounds like they have so much fun writing these things. When's the last time you used the phrase venomous swish? When's the last time you used the word venomous? Anyway, despite that swipe and a continuing torrent of rhetoric from Pyongyang threatening nuclear war and other mayhem, President Park Geun-hye is sticking by her campaign vow to reach out to North Korea's young leader Kim Jong-un and to send the country much-needed humanitarian aid. Public frustration with the last 5 years of North-South relations, which saw North Korean nuclear tests, long-range rocket launches, and attacks that left dozens of South Koreans dead, is a big part of the reason Park is trying to build trust with Pyongyang, even as she and South Korea's military promised to respond forcefully to any possible attack from the North. Now, in recent days, North Korea has vowed merciless retaliation and said it will no longer abide by the armistice that ended the Korean War. In fact, they disconnected their phone. They have this special hotline. If you're in the South and you pick up that phone, somebody in the North is supposed to pick up and say, yeah, what do you want? And now they don't do that anymore. So they've either disconnected it or they're just not picking it up. Nobody really knows. So, yeah, sexist remarks, that's what is coming out of North Korea right now. They also say they're the victim of intensive cyber attacks, which I find to be kind of hard to believe, because how do you even get to a North Korean computer in the first place to attack it? It's not really that easy, if it's possible at all. Now, North Korea's state news agency reported on Friday that the country's internet servers, are subject to daily intensive and persistent virus attacks that the government blames on hostile forces, including the United States. How many people even know the top-level domain of North Korea? I'm not even sure I know that. But even if you did, if you were able to find a machine in that particular top-level domain, odds are it wouldn't be in North Korea in the first place. It's probably in Japan. It is nobody's secret that the U.S. and the South Korean puppet regime, North Korean saying this, in case it's not obvious, the U.S. and the South Korean puppet regime are massively bolstering up cyber forces in a bid to intensify the subversive activities and sabotages against the DPRK, Democratic People's Republic of Korea. That's according to their official report. They are seriously mistaken if they think they can quell the DPRK's voices of justice through such base acts. The U.S. and its allies should be held wholly accountable for the ensuing consequences. Well, you know, it would be interesting to see just what these attacks are and how people are reaching North Korean computers in their eyes. Now, U.S. Army General James Thurman, who is the commander of U.S. Forces Korea, said a year ago that North Korea had its own growing cyber warfare capability, and we've accused them of attacking us, too, which is equally ridiculous. In a statement before a congressional hearing, he said such attacks have been increasingly employed against a variety of targets, including military, governmental, educations, and commercial institutions. Did he really say it that way? A variety of targets, including military, governmental, educations. That's not even a word. Not like that, anyway. So, yeah, fun from North Korea. It never stops. But it could lead to something more serious if somebody does something dumb, and that's always possible, so worth paying attention to. News from Canada, and this is a bit of fun here. A brazen, though ultimately unsuccessful, Quebec helicopter jailbreak over the weekend allegedly began after a gun was pulled on the helicopter's pilot. Yeah, just like in the movies. According to police, a .38 caliber handgun was used to force a helicopter pilot to fly off course on Sunday and head towards a prison in Saint-Jérôme, where two inmates managed to escape by dangling from the helicopter on a cable lowered down. How do you like that? However, their freedom was short-lived. The four suspects, two accomplices and two inmates, appeared in the Quebec court Monday, hours after police arrested the men and ended the dramatic jailbreak. The two inmates have been identified as Benjamin Houdon Barbeau and Danny Provencal, two accomplices not yet identified. The suspects are each facing nearly two dozen charges now. They didn't enter a plea on Monday, but they're scheduled to make their next court appearance on April 16th, unless more helicopters arrive. Crown lawyer Steve Barabo said, it's a very similar name to one of the inmates, said Monday that the prosecution will oppose bail for all four suspects. Of course, two of them are already in prison, so that'd be a neat trick if you got charged with something new and got bail for that, and they kind of forgot that you were already in prison. But I think they're onto that. Anyway, the prosecutor says, you're talking about an escape from a prison, one of our institutions, in a helicopter. It's special. It is a special case, and something rather unique from our neighbors to the north. Now, earlier yesterday, police explained the two inmates managed to escape on Sunday afternoon when a helicopter hovered over the correctional facility, located about 60 kilometers northwest of Montreal. Now, according to witnesses, the men used a line dangling from the aircraft to be lifted from the prison. Well, police followed the helicopter. I guess that's not too hard to do. Eventually locating one of the escapees and the two suspected accomplices in a vehicle before giving chase. The three suspects fired at police as they ran from the car to a chalet in Chertsey, Quebec, about 50 kilometers north of the jail. Police returned fire, but no one was hurt in the exchange. They say the helicopter pilot was not a part of the whole plot. He was actually doing something else when he was distracted and forced to fly over the prison. It's daring. You know, any kind of prison break like that deserves some kind of a nod, because you don't think that kind of thing really happens. But yeah, people are trying all kinds of things. All right. You hear about this that happened in Cyprus over the weekend? Cyprus is another country, a small country in Europe, facing all kinds of economic issues. And the plan that was announced over the weekend was that everybody who had money in a Cyprus bank account was going to wind up paying a rather large tax to help raise $7.5 billion. And they need $20 billion, so this was kind of a desperate measure. So those people had savings of, say, up to $130,000. They would have been charged a 6.75% tax, just like that. And people with more than that would be charged 9.9%. And what it basically means is that any guarantee that your money is safe in a bank, thrown out the window. So this, naturally, it happened over a weekend, and people ran to banks, to ATMs, because banks weren't open, to take all their money out, and ATMs quickly ran out of money. And the panic spread. And yesterday was a bank holiday, so it didn't even get any better then. And then countries like Greece and Italy, also facing bailout plans, austerity, possible bankruptcy. People began to wonder, well, if it could happen in Cyprus, it could happen here. And we're looking at a Eurozone-wide run on banks, meaning people are just going to take their money out and put it someplace else. It was kind of a dumb move, really, because all it did was allow people to lose whatever faith they had in financial institutions. Not much faith left, but there was the belief that your money was safe in a bank. Well, with this kind of nonsense that can happen almost literally in the middle of the night over a weekend, all bets are off. So this resulted in all kinds of turmoil in the markets and various other places. Now, today, lawmakers in Cyprus rejected the bailout plan that would have rescued the country's banks but forced savers to chip in for the cost, throwing down a gauntlet to the rest of Europe over the financial fate of the tiny island nation. Yeah, so now it's not even going to happen. They've got the worst of both worlds. They've pissed everybody off, made people lose confidence in the banks, and they didn't get the money that they thought they were going to steal. And yeah, it is stealing. when you reach into a savings account and just yank this this amount of money out and don't give people a chance to seek alternatives, that's pretty much theft in my eyes. So the plan proved so controversial, not a single one of the 56 members of Cyprus's parliament voted for the plan this evening. And that rejection leaves the fate of rescue plans up in the air, with other European leaders thus far unwilling to step in to save Cyprus, whose bank deposits tower over the rest of its economy. That's the other thing. A lot of people keep money in Cyprus. In fact, a lot of Russians keep money in Cyprus. And Vladimir Putin had some unkind words to say about this whole plan yesterday. So, yeah, it's the turmoil is getting more and more frenzied, it seems. And who would have thought that Cyprus would be the catalyst in whatever happens next? Definitely worth watching. And, of course, it'll eventually affect things here one way or another. We like to blind ourselves towards reality. I know that. It's a good defense mechanism, but it can only work for so long. And for many people, it's not working at all. There are many of us in financial straits of all sorts, people losing homes, people not having any health care, people living in horrible conditions while being told that they live in one of the richest economies in the world. Well, that's nonsense to the vast majority of people here. And one can only guess where it will lead in the months, years, decades ahead. But the gap between rich and poor is pretty wide. And I don't really see many signs of it narrowing anytime soon. I was in a good mood, too. I just look at the news and I get depressed and negative. I should just work on my own things more often and not even turn on the TV or read a newspaper or check the internet. Actually, it's kind of healthy to do that, to simply bury yourself in something that might not seem huge in the eyes of the rest of the world, but for you is pretty important. For me, it's cleaning out a closet. Yes, if you must know, that's what I've been involved in, is cleaning out a closet with all kinds of memorabilia from decades. And, of course, one of the sad parts about all this is that some of it was destroyed. And it's my own fault, too. During one of our hurricanes, I think it was one last year, I had the brilliant idea to fill up the bathtub with water, because when you lose power, having a bathtub full of water is a good thing, because you can flush toilets with it, and you have water to, for emergencies of various sorts. And if your tap doesn't work without power, then it's a good thing to think of. And unfortunately, I was filling it up. I forgot I was filling it up. And then when I remembered, it had overflowed and seeped through. And yes, the closet was right beneath the bathtub, so a lot of things in there got wet. There was no flooding at all from the hurricane. All the flooding was because of me. It was the only hurricane damage. So I felt kind of silly and rather sad when I saw the things that were destroyed. A lot of things weren't destroyed, but the things that were, well, it just didn't have to happen. And that happens to everybody at some point, no matter where you keep your various artifacts from the past, whether it's in a storage locker or a garage or an attic. At some point, something's going to happen, and it will be destroyed or hurt in some way, which is why it's always a good idea to make whatever backups you can. And, of course, with physical things, it's we don't yet have the ability to create physical replicas, but we can note them in other ways, with scanners, with cameras, various technological tools. So that's what I've been involved in, is kind of sorting through all that and filing things away, feeling a bit more organized and a lot cleaner, too. All this trash, I'm being pretty merciless, too. You know, there's no reason for me to have newspapers from when I went to college here that aren't even of interest to anybody, especially when they're available in other places. But for some reason, I would save these things. Save all kinds of things. So it's, I guess, a bit of spring cleaning maybe is what you could describe it as. It's therapeutic. But then, you know, you turn on the TV or you go on the internet and you see bad things or you come in here. Okay, so I just heard about this as I was on my way over. I guess I shouldn't be surprised. But our Senate has decided to drop the proposal to ban assault weapons. Yeah, in the wake of all the mass shootings, even with all that, they feel that it has no chance to pass. This is not something new, even. This is something old, something that existed before and was allowed under Bush to expire. And we've moved so far into the realm of insanity that we don't have the possibility of passing a law that includes a ban on assault weapons. It's simply staggering to me. You know, we're not talking about banning weapons, taking people's rifles and pistols, whatever else they have. We're talking about military-style assault weapons. You know? And even after a massacre in a kindergarten, even after shopping malls and movie theaters and members of Congress are mowed down in various ways. Not enough now. We have a Congress that doesn't have any guts, and we have people that don't speak loudly enough. And yes, we also have other people that do speak loudly and are listened to, who I don't agree with, but again, I've said this before, that's what they're supposed to do. They're supposed to say what's on their mind and get attention. Well, they've got that attention, and the people on our side have not. And that's very unfortunate. So the Senate next month will consider a bill to increase the penalties for people who buy and sell illegal guns, which is a measure greatly reduced in scope and reach from the gun safety agenda, which was sought by President Obama. The bill will not include the reinstatement of an assault weapons ban, championed by Senator Dianne Feinstein of California, who met the measure's demise with anger and despondency. I tried my best, she said. My best, I guess, wasn't good enough. For 10 minutes, she held forth on her rage and disappointment. How many assault weapons do you need circulating, she asked, noting that her bill, which had almost no chance of ever having a hearing in the House, exempted many weapons. To have these mass killings is such a blight on everything that America stands for. Well, it's reality now. It's reality that you can mow down a school, you can have all kinds of mass shootings like you've never experienced before, and it's not going to make a difference. So the real question is, how do we deal with this? How do we live in a society that this kind of thing is going to be embraced? And yeah, embraced. People are encouraged to buy these assault weapons. And it's something that is becoming fast a part of our daily lives, one way or another. And the rest of the world is just looking at us and saying, what is wrong with these people? And I'm sure history will look at us in the same way. Because think about where it goes from here. Now, we live in a fairly sane state where there is an assault weapons ban, and people here want that. And it's funny how the champions of states' rights are the first ones to say, well, that has to be overturned by the federal government. Yeah, you know, the people here, I don't think, are going to tolerate that. And if that's what it takes, if it takes different states having different ways of life, you know, it's not perfect, but it's something. And if my state can remain sane and at least realize that these things are a blight upon our society, it's better than nothing. But, boy, I have to wonder. And, you know, I'd really like to, I don't mean to be patronizing in my disgust here, but I really have to wonder, and I'd like to hear from people who disagree. What is the reason that you need assault weapons? What is that particular reason? Is there a revolution coming that I don't know about? Are you planning something? And please don't fall back on the it's guaranteed in the Bill of Rights. It's my right as an American. No, you know, this is something that we will debate forever, whether or not you have the right for something like that, whether that falls under what the Second Amendment was originally written about. I maintain it does not. I maintain the Second Amendment means something completely different. So let's not even have that discussion. What is the actual reason? Is it something you need for hunting purposes? You need assault weapons for that? Is it something that you need to feel safe in your home? And if so, then how come a regular shotgun, rifle, pistol, whatever, the almost unlimited types of guns that exist already, how come those aren't enough? Are you expecting your home to be invaded by an army? I really am trying to understand it. Because really all I'm getting is defiance. That people want these weapons because they can. And because they want to send a message. And they're angry. And these aren't real reasons. What is the actual reason why you feel you need this? So please, if you write to us or call us, answer that question. Because I need to learn. I need to understand this. This apparently is going to be a major part of our country forever. I can't think of anything else that would convince people that assault weapons are a bad idea. School shootings, assassinations, living in fear, those aren't working. It's not making people think any differently, and they feel... one of the things, and this is actually kind of ironic, one of the reasons I do here is that people feel they need to have these to protect themselves against the other people who have them. And ridiculous as that sounds, that is a valid reason. But think about it. Think about the insanity that brought us to this, and think about where it's going to bring us in the future. With that kind of logic, you'll just keep needing to get more and bigger weapons to protect yourself against those other people that are doing the same thing. So is it really just to protect ourselves against ourselves? Or is there some other reason? Are Canadians coming over the border and we need to mow them down or something? I've really tried to think of what the reason is, and I can't. And it's sad because we're going to see a country that continues to be afraid, that continues to put barriers up, literal barriers, because people feel they need to be protected from all the crazies out there. People who aren't crazy yet, but people who will go crazy and will have the means to take a lot of people with them. One thing I hear a lot, and this is something that is true, is that an assault weapons ban isn't going to stop massacres. Very true. I don't think anyone said it would. You can still shoot a bunch of kids in a school with a regular non-assault weapon. You can cause all kinds of fear and mayhem, carnage. What not having an assault weapon does, though, is enable you not to put a times 10 after that, or a times 50 after that, or whatever factor such horrors can be increased by with these kinds of weapons of war. So, you know, if we're going to have assault weapons, we damn well better have a war. That's all I'm saying. It's something that is designed for that purpose, not for everyday living. Oh, yeah, a target practice. That's the other reason people come up with. Okay, fine. You know what? You want to shoot things with a assault weapon. That's great, but I assume the target range isn't in your house. So, again, what's the reason for having it on you? All right. You know, I'd like to take phone calls. Our email address, for those of you who are bubbling over with rage right now because I just don't get it. Our email address, otw@2600.com. You notice I'm not even talking about all the shooting news that's around. I'm not talking about the grandmother who killed her grandson with a shotgun. I'm not talking about the mass attack that was thwarted in Florida just by some good luck, or the kid who got sentenced today and was smiling. And now I'm not talking about any of that. And there's a lot more, too, because we could spend, and we have spent hours on that subject. I don't want to, but this just happened today, and it was a bit of a shock to me. Actually, not that much of a shock. I wasn't that surprised. But I did think there'd be more of a fight, and I'm very disappointed in our alleged leaders who really don't know how to lead. They only know how to read polls and try and get elected again. Well, it's time to send them a message, and time to send a lot of other people messages in the way that the opposition also sends messages. This is one thing they have down. They can get the attention, and it's on all of us for not speaking loudly enough, not making this an issue. We also have, in the world of insanity and things that that will be judged for in the centuries ahead, and these are drones. You've heard about drones. They're being talked about more and more. But reading this particular story, I think it really drives it home. A CIA drone flies so high that farmers in Pakistan can't even see it. But then a missile slams right into them, thrusting shrapnel in all directions, killing most of them. And none of them are militants. Such attacks by U.S. drones are common, according to the United Nations Commission on Counterterrorism and Human Rights. This was said on Friday concerning strikes in Pakistan's tribal region of North Waziristan. Ben Emerson says, I'm not aware of any state in the world that currently shares the United States' expansive legal perspective that it is engaged in a global war, that is to say, a non-international armed conflict with Al-Qaeda and any group associated with Al-Qaeda, wherever they are to be found, that would therefore lawfully entitle the United States to take action involving targeted killing wherever an individual is found. Now think of that ability. But you can't even see it in the sky. There is something so far up, and there are people who are controlling these devices and are able to look on the ground and see targets and aim for those targets. And from out of the sky, a missile will come and destroy that target. Imagine living that kind of a life. Imagine that happening here, because it will happen here. These things are always tried out on the military, in foreign countries, before they're implemented here. In fact, we've even had members of the Obama administration saying that theoretically it would be possible to have a drone strike in the United States. I can't believe they said that. It seems like that would be the one thing you wouldn't want to say, but yeah, that's what they're predicting. And even if they said they weren't going to be doing this, or that there was absolutely no possibility in the future, can we really believe that? The American Civil Liberties Union and other U.S. groups are questioning the legitimacy of President Obama's approved drone program. On Friday, a U.S. federal appeals court ruled that the CIA must acknowledge the existence of any records related to military unmanned drone strikes targeting individuals, such as overseas terror suspects. The ACLU and others had filed a Freedom of Information Act request, but the CIA refused to confirm or deny it had any such records, citing national security. Now, a lot of people over in Pakistan dressed the same way as Taliban members from the same region, and so drone operators mistake them for terror targets. It's also customary for men over there to carry a weapon, making them virtually indistinguishable from militants to an outsider. One man said to CNN, just because I have a beard and wear a turban, does that make me part of the Taliban? Now, this is the scary part. The United States has 8,000 drones, which are unmanned planes and helicopters flown by remote control. They're outfitted with a video camera to help the operator spot targets and often armed with weapons used to neutralize them. CIA Director John Brennan has said only in exceedingly rare cases have civilians been accidentally injured or, worse, killed in these strikes. I'm sure there are many people who would take issue with that statement. A study by the Bureau of Investigative Journalism estimates that since 2004, Pakistan alone has had 365 drone strikes that have killed between 2,536 and 3,577 people, including nearly 1,000 civilians. That study concludes that the strikes have killed far more people than the United States has acknowledged and traumatized many more innocent people, and that trauma is destroying a way of life. Now, the United States has the drones, but eventually someone else will have drones too. And then we can all live in a world where, at any moment, a missile can come falling from the sky with no warning. I see parallels here. I see parallels with one form of insanity and another form of insanity, and both of them leading us into this really horrible world of fear, suspicion, death, and a lot of backwards motion, because we are certainly not moving forward with this. 631-632-6901 is our telephone number if people are out there wish to comment on any of these issues or other issues, too. We're open to just about all of them. We're going to take a brief sojourn into delay land and hopefully have some phone calls when we come back.
This is Timo Burnett saying don't believe anything that you hear except for the wild truth on WUSB.
Again, 631-632-6901 is our telephone number. And I should point out that we will be in fundraising mode next week and therefore unable to take listener phone calls. We'll be taking pledge phone calls, and we only have one set of phones, so we can't do both at the same time. 631-632-6901. And as if that's not enough, as far as things falling out of the sky, we also have to worry about asteroids. And there's been a hearing with Congress and NASA today concerning the options for dealing with the threats posed by asteroids and comets. Lawmakers can either provide adequate funding for detecting and characterizing near-Earth objects and diverting them if necessary, or they can pray. Yeah. Threats from space are generally the stuff of science fiction movies, like Armageddon, Deep Impact, things like that. But members of the House Science Committee took a hard look at the realities during today's hearing, which came in response to the February 15th meteor explosion over Russia, as well as a close encounter with a much bigger asteroid known as 2012 DA14. The lawmakers didn't always like what they heard. The committee's chairman, Representative Lamar Smith, a Republican of Texas, told the panelists more than once that the progress report they delivered was not reassuring. But representatives from both parties were receptive to the idea of putting more resources into the effort to counter cosmic threats. White House science advisor John Holdren noted that the funding devoted annually to cataloging potentially threatening asteroids has risen from $5 million to more than $20 million over the past couple of years. But even at that level, NASA Administrator Charles Bolden estimated that it would take until 2030 to catalog 90% of the near-Earth objects between 140 meters and 1 kilometer in width, as mandated by Congress. Maybe we can help you out with the budget. Don't know, Smith replied. He said, we need to find ways to prioritize NASA's projects. Well, saving the Earth is a little more than just a project, I think. But the single most useful project, according to Holdren, would be to put an infrared sensing telescope in a Venus-like orbit, like the Sentinel Space Telescope being developed by the nonprofit B612 Foundation. The telescope could look for asteroids that currently can't be spotted from the ground because they spend much of their time within Earth's orbit where they're lost in the sun's glare. The 55-foot-wide rock that blew up without warning in Russia last month was just such an asteroid. It came from a direction where our existing telescopes could not look. We cannot look in the sun. It's the first thing they tell you as a kid. And it's true to this day. So, yeah, these are the kinds of things that we do well to pay attention to and be a part of. Hunting for asteroids. No calls, really. Okay, you know, this is part of the problem, folks. This is part of the problem. This is why we see things like the ban on assault weapons evaporate, because people think their voices don't matter. They are just watching YouTube or wasting time doing something and not thinking. Off somewhere, being distracted by nonsense. Or, like most people I know, just pessimistically resigned, believing that their voice doesn't matter, they can never make a difference. We're seeing this evidence right here in front of us, thanks to USB listeners. 631-632-6901. Will you be the person to dial those numbers and actually have a dialogue, have a voice, say something? Oh, I know there are listeners. You know how I know? I can see, on the internet at least, the many, many people who download the show, stream the show. I know you're out there. So what this is telling me is that you've given up. You feel it's hopeless. You feel there's nothing you can contribute. Wow. Well, that is something. That is a sobering thought and something we do well to learn from. I only have 1 minute before I have to go out of delay. If that phone doesn't ring, that means that we have all been cowed into submission. Or we all disagree with me. This was also possible, I suppose. But, you know, I invited people to disagree with me, too. Maybe it's too controversial, something that we must avoid at all costs. Maybe we're not on the air. There's always that possibility, too. But I think we are. 30 seconds? Nobody? 631-632-6901. Wow, this is something. History is being made here today. What is it? March 19th, 2013. Day listeners stopped caring. Well, that's it. I'm out of delay now. How sad. How very sad. All right, well, this is the world that we're going to be living in, the world of assault weapons and drone strikes, and I guess, as long as we have our escapism to occupy our brains, that's just fine with us. Hopefully we do better in the fundraiser. I sure hope our listeners care more about that. You can write to us, otw@2600.com. I know a lot of people listen to the show later and probably will kick themselves for not listening live when they could have said something, but you can say something in a letter at least, and hopefully we'll have 100 letters next week of people that actually do care. We're going to go out with a piece of music from a television show that people just aren't watching because I guess they don't care about that either. Tremé, one of the best shows ever made by the people that made The Wire. All about life in New Orleans post-Katrina. Kind of thing that isn't your typical television program because you never know where it's going to go, and it's kind of like just living life. And, you know, to people who expect action and adventure, you'll say nothing happened, when in fact so much did happen. If you have the chance, I recommend watching this program. It's been on for 3 seasons, and we'll be finishing later this year with an abbreviated 4th season of only 5 episodes, because people weren't watching or speaking or taking an interest. It's sad when that happens, because this was one of the best programs, musically, dramatically, thematically. And I'd like to see more things like this in the future. For those of you not familiar with American culture, I can't recommend this program enough to learn something about one part of American culture. There's so much of it out there, so many interesting communities and positive things going on that people really need to tune into and not feel hopeless. Anyway, going out with music from Tremé, Emmanuel from Off the Wall. We'll see you next week. Good night.
Oh, yeah. New Orleans in the house. One time. And we repping the 504 all day, every day. This is my city, my hometown. They ain't representing, so I gotta hold it down. Say, this is my city, my hometown. They ain't representing, so I gotta hold it down now.
How they feel?